What role do family-owned or controlled businesses play in the economy and in economic performance and in our prosperity? It's huge, bigger than you think. And family businesses are the best venture capitalists.
This is the Economics for Business podcast. We're here to help all businesses become champions for customers and value, improving lives with preferred and innovative products and services. We offer you the knowledge and tools to make your entrepreneurial journey a successful one. Now, here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. We don't talk that much about family businesses as a segment, but we should. Family businesses, defined by family-owned equity or family control, represent roughly two-thirds of U.S. GDP and 60% of employment. They are truly the backbone of the economy. This is not often fully recognized. We'll dig deeper into this important business phenomenon in future Economics for Business podcasts. Today, we're focusing on one aspect of family corporations, and that's their role as venture capitalists. Venture capital can play many roles in the advancement of firms. We traditionally think of it as the single-mindedly financial rocket ship, aiming at fast returns in a short period of time, exiting rapidly via sale or IPO, and moving on to the next thing. It's the definition of high time preference investing. That's undoubtedly the case with much venture capital. But there are other flavors. One is corporate venture capital, where goals of financial returns, while still present, are blended with more strategic goals. Those might include getting access to a new technology, or just exploring it, or putting a toe into a new market, or bringing some new partners or channels into the corporate fold. These goals tend towards a more tempered time preference. There's more to it than a rapid sprint to a high multiple exit. And there's another flavor we can call family venture capital. The family firms that are the backbone of the economy also invest, and they demonstrate the potential of an even better approach to venture capital. Our expert guest today is Professor Samuele Mertinu. A return visitor, he's professor of international business at the School of Economics at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands, although he's originally from Italy, and he previously did his research at the Catholic University of Milan in the Department of Economics and Finance. His insights come to us via the most in-depth and rigorous research based on a definitive, detailed database that he compiled. He is a singular expert on this analytical approach and the insights it reveals. Sam, welcome to the Economics for Business podcast.
Hey, Hunter, thank you for this new invitation.
Well, it's great to have you back. We got a lot of great comments on the last episode we did together. It's number 129 for anyone who's listening. But you're an expert on the analysis of deep and rich longitudinal databases that you use to reveal unanticipated and new findings and business insights. We're going to talk about different forms and classifications of venture capital today from your data analysis, and you've come to some unusual and exciting conclusions, I think. So let's start with a fundamental classification you can help us with. Not all venture capital and VC funds are the same, and in a paper that we'll link to for the Journal of Economics and Management Strategy, you differentiate between independent VCs and corporate VCs. So let's start there and ask you to explain that, Sam.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I would like to introduce the main difference between independent or traditional venture capital and corporate venture capital. So just to give you a very rough idea of what is traditional venture capital firms set up venture capital funds in the sense that there are these general partners, so these fund managers, who go on the market and try to raise a certain amount of capital. Conditional to the fact that they reach a certain threshold of capital, they can start up their fund. Okay, so there is a memorandum of investment in which for each venture capital fund, it is specified, for instance, the target investments in terms of types of companies, industries, geographic location, et cetera, and there is a contract that is called limited partnership between the venture capital fund and each capital provider. Okay? So why this contract is called limited partnership? Because the investors of the fund are just passive investors. So if you are an investor of a venture capital fund, you put your money in the fund and then basically you wait, hopefully, your return from the investment. Okay? But the only active part is played by the general partner of the venture capital fund. Instead, in the case of corporate venture capital fund, there is no independence between fund management and fund ownership. Because basically, corporations set up these corporate venture capital programs, and these corporate venture capital programs are fully owned and managed by the corporation. Obviously, the corporation, for instance, the CEO or the CFO of the corporation, appoint a corporate venture capital manager for this corporate venture capital program, and this corporate venture capital manager is in charge to, you know, select targets and make the due diligence in the companies, etc., etc. I would say that the main difference between independent venture capital and corporate venture capital is about their objectives and goals. So while the goal of traditional venture capital is very easy to understand, it's a pure financial objective. So I would say to get the highest capital gain in the shortest possible time. In the case of corporate venture capital, there are strategic objectives in addition or in substitution sometimes of financial objectives. So for instance, the typical push to corporate venture capital programs is relates to declining internal R&D performance. So sometimes corporations face a lower return of their internal R&D, and so they start these corporate venture capital programs. So corporate venture capital, I would say that exposes corporations to new technologies, new startups, new innovation, and in general, new ideas from the market. And so these strategic objectives associated to corporate venture capital include the potential improvement of manufacturing processes. For instance, they can scout a venture who is developing a new manufacturing process, and so they can try to integrate this process into their corporation. There are international opportunities. So for instance, through corporate venture capital, corporation can enter new markets without a high level of commitment, like in the case of an acquisition, for instance. They can license technology. So for instance, a famous example is provided by Microsoft. The corporate venture capital initiative by Microsoft is called IP Ventures. And so the idea is that Microsoft has so many patents and so many technologies that it would be impossible for Microsoft to use internally all of these technologies. And so Microsoft created this IP venture to license these technologies to startups in order to generate additional royalties. Or another example is demand enhancement. So there was a famous, I would say, an exemplary corporate venture capital investment by Red Hat, in 1998, if I'm not wrong. And so that investment was the typical hardware and software type of investment. So you invest in an industry that is just upward or downward in your supply chain in order to create demand for your main product. So just to complete this reasoning, so strategic objective, when we think about strategic objectives, this can be achieved not only via a monetary support to target ventures, but also in the form of non-monetary support. So for instance, there is a famous case by IBM. So IBM typically supports its portfolio companies via consultancy. So IBM sells or licenses a technology to a startup, and then it provides consultancy to reduce the so-called absorption cost for the venture. And so the venture has strong incentives to adopt this technology. And so basically for IBM, it's easier to diffuse a standard in the market. And finally, I would just say a couple of words about syndicates between traditional venture capitalists and corporate venture capitalists. So sometimes corporate VC and independent VC, they co-invest, they syndicate together some deals. And on the one end, there may be a possible conflict of interest between IVC and CVC, because IVC wants to maximize the financial return in the shortest possible time, as we discussed before. And instead, corporate venture capital sometimes prefer to wait a bit more to exit the investment, because they want to leave the entrepreneur to properly develop the technology or the product. But on the other end, the main advantage of this type of mixed syndicates relates to provides very high-powered incentives for entrepreneurs, because the entrepreneur is much more relieved when there is a syndicate, including IVC, because there is a possibility for corporate venture capital, in theory, to steal the technology for the entrepreneur. And so the entrepreneur is not so willing to commit effort when there is only corporate venture capital sometimes. And so the presence of IVC represents a kind of social defense for the entrepreneur.
That's fascinating, Sam, and it opens up a whole new world of appreciation of all of the subtleties. You painted this lovely picture of Microsoft IP Ventures, and I can see them licensing technology. You said they help with the absorption of that technology. They probably put some cash in some cases as well, and maybe they even lend some executive help and so on. So it's very multidimensional, but one of the issues might be measurement. One of the aspects of venture capital is it's got numbers, you know, return rates and speed to market and those kinds of things, whereas it sounds like corporate venture capital is maybe a little bit more difficult to measure. Would that be right?
Yes, absolutely, because in the sense that, given to the fact that the goal of independent venture capital is purely financial, this is directly measurable. So you can calculate a return on investment. Sometimes you can calculate the how many times in terms of initial capital you generate. So for instance, you see the valuation after the investment, and you can say, okay, the final valuation of the company is 30 times the capital injected in the company, for instance. So there are these type of measures that are, you know, very easy. And I would also say that in the case of traditional venture capital, the type of incentives for managers are very easy to get. So there is a carried interest for the venture capital manager. And so suppose, for instance, that there is an agreement between the venture capital manager and a certain limited partner of the fund. And suppose that this agreement is, let's say, 15% return out of the investment. Suppose that in the end, the return is not 15%, but 20%. So this additional 5%, so this additional return that was not in the contract, 20% of this additional return is for the venture capital manager. So there is a super strong incentive for the venture capital manager to provide a lot of effort and to spot all of the best companies in the market. And so also from the point of view of the incentives, in the case of independent venture capital, it is relatively easy to measure this type of incentives. The last aspect is also in terms of planning. So when you look at the strategies of traditional venture capitalists, there is a certain duration associated to the investment. So suppose that you are an investor of a venture capital fund and you put some money in the fund. When you agree with the venture capital fund manager, the venture capital fund manager can tell you, okay, I plan to exit my investments in 5 years. And so you know that your capital will be committed to the fund for 5 years. In the case of corporate venture capital, the story is completely different. First of all, when we talk about strategic objectives, they are by definition very difficult to measure. Because, for instance, suppose that you want to measure the level of innovativeness, additional innovativeness generated by a certain corporate venture capital investment. This is relatively difficult to measure. Or suppose that you want to measure the level of integration of a certain technology into the technological base of a corporation. Still difficult to measure. Also, in terms of incentives, These are completely different from traditional venture capital. Because if a corporation tries to replicate exactly the incentives of traditional venture capital, there would be an excessive incentive for the corporate venture capital manager to achieve financial goals and not strategic goals. And so you cannot replicate exactly the type of incentive schemes in traditional venture capital, but and at the same time, there is also an equity problem. So if you would replicate the incentives of traditional venture capital in a corporate venture capital fund, there would be the risk that the pay of the corporate venture capital fund manager would be higher than the CEO of the corporation. And this would be a big problem for the corporation. The other problem is that when you talk with corporate venture capitalists, in many cases, they do not have a planned duration of the investments. So sometimes they say, okay, I target a company and I wait and see. So we can say that corporate venture capitalists are more tolerant to failure. Okay, so they prefer to stay in the capital, in the equity capital of the ventures longer. And so they see and they look the development of the technology. Finally, I would say that even if you look at the contracts between independent venture capital and corporate venture capital, they are extremely different. Because in the case of independent venture capital, for instance, a typical contractual clause that is included is the veto right. So in the board of directors, the members of the of traditional venture capital funds have always the possibility to put a veto on each strategic decision of the venture. Instead, in the case of corporate venture capital, they prefer the so-called non-voting observer seats. So the corporate venture capital wants to sit in the board of directors and see what the entrepreneur is doing. So they are completely different approaches. And plus, I would say that another dimension of strategic objective relates to the type of industry in which the investment is located. So strategic objectives can be pursued in close industry, relatively close industries, or in industries that are quite far from the core business of the corporation. Like a famous example is in 2009, a famous example of a corporate venture capital investment by Google Ventures, that is the corporate venture capital program of Google, in Adimab, was a biotech company. So even in industries that are very far from the core business, you can still pursue a strategic objective for your corporation.
It's fascinating the differences, Sam. And there's also a more of a two-way interchange, I would think, between corporate venture capital and the companies they invest in the sense of the company that's receiving the investment may also have access to the resources of the parent organization. So suddenly they have great access to much greater resources than they would with a traditional venture capital fund. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say that corporate venture capital can bring different advantages to the venture in comparison to independent venture capital, because I would define the relationship between a corporate venture capital fund and a certain venture as a kind of synergy between the two companies. So just to give you an example, suppose that you focus on a relationship between an independent venture capital and a venture. So the typical transaction is that an independent venture capital puts financial resources in the company and then helps this company to create certain networks, for instance, with other investors or with other partners, alliance partners, for instance. In the case of corporate venture capital, instead, the unique advantages of corporate venture capital are internal resources of the corporation that are not available for traditional venture capital. For instance, you may think about distribution channels. So, for instance, you may be an entrepreneur with a very brilliant idea, with a very good product, but you do not have the possibility to access distribution channels to distribute your product. And so you can ally via a corporate venture capital investment with a corporation, and so you may exploit the brand of the corporation. You are a kind of umbrella company of the corporation, and this brings a lot of advantages. Sometimes the corporation can give you access to its sales force, for instance. Or otherwise, you may use the production capacity and some other complementary technological competencies in the corporation. Sometimes you may use the so-called beta sites. So as an entrepreneur, you access these beta sites in the corporation so that you can develop some intermediary versions or the so-called beta versions of your product in a speedy way. Or otherwise, you can also use R&D personnel. So sometimes corporations transfer researchers into the venture in order to speed up the development of a certain technology. Another key aspect of the relationship between corporate venture capital and portfolio companies relates to the so-called experimentation. So we know that many businesses are fraught with uncertainty, with a lot of uncertainty. And so a way for the entrepreneur to try to reduce this uncertainty faced by the corporate investor is to let the corporate investor in the venture so that the corporate venture capital can screen day by day the development process of the product in order to speed up the development of a certain intermediate product and so reduce the uncertainty. This creates two advantages for the entrepreneur. On the one end, through experimentation, some capital becomes accessible. And on the other end, you can basically exploit much better all of the competencies of the corporation. Obviously, the risk is an opportunism risk. This is the trade-off.
Yep. Well, it's fascinating, the accumulation of differences here. So let's get to the data, Sam. You analyzed a large amount of data about, just to remind people, IVC, Independent Venture Capital, and CVC, Corporate Venture Capital. What did you conclude?
Yeah, basically we found that both forms of venture capital positively impact the economic performance of their portfolio companies. So what we find is that in terms of overall economic performance, with overall economic performance, I mean total factor productivity. So on total factor productivity, the contribution of IVC is in the surroundings of plus 40%, while CVC is plus 50%. But there are some differences. So IVC tends to increase more the performance in the short term, while CVC increase more the performance in the long term. And this is due to the fact that the holding period of the corporate venture capital investment is longer in comparison to the holding period of traditional venture capital investments. Other differences are that independent venture capital increase the sales of portfolio companies in the short term much more than CVCs. I would say double, according to our estimate. But on the other end, when you are an entrepreneur backed by a traditional venture capital fund, you need to increase the cost of labor. And instead, this doesn't happen with corporate venture capital, obviously because there is this symbiotic relationship between the corporate venture capital fund and the portfolio company.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a kind of time preference to the independent venture capital. They want to step on the gas, grow things quick. They don't mind adding cost to do that. They want their exit in 5 years, whereas the corporate venture capital has a lower time preference maybe. They got longer horizons. Is that a legitimate finding?
Absolutely. And basically, we also have some empirical evidence about what you just said. So for instance, suppose that you focus on the positive exits associated to corporate venture capital and independent venture capital. There is empirical evidence that after the IPO, corporate venture capital investors stay longer in the equity capital of their portfolio companies in comparison to independent venture capital. So you are totally right.
A quick note, did you know that we provide supplemental materials for each podcast? Listening to and understanding the key takeaways from our expert guests helps you think better about building a more beautiful business. Taking direct action and implementing these strategies is when the real work begins. Take a concrete, immediate step to implementing a better business model today by downloading the show notes and business tool we've created for this episode. Visit Mises.org/E4BPod. That's MISES.org/E4BPod. And click on today's episode. Now, back to our interview.
Good. I like that. just to explain one term you used. It was economist speak, Sam, which is total factor productivity. What do you mean when you talk about that, total economic performance?
Yeah, so basically, in a very simple terms, suppose that you have a production function. So we know that the idea of firms, they want to maximize production, right? So they have a certain production. In order to produce something, so products, services, et cetera, they need some capital inputs. We can imagine these inputs like capital and labor, just for the sake of simplicity, okay? And so when you try to estimate the contribution of capital and labor to the production of a certain firm, there is something that you cannot explain just with the inputs of production. And so this residual is the total factor productivity. So total factor productivity is an idiosyncratic factor associated to a certain firm that makes this firm more or less productive than its competitors. And the main sources of this idiosyncratic factor can relate to better human capital or other, so for instance, I don't know, the creativity of the entrepreneur, the subjective judgment of the entrepreneur, all of these aspects that they are kind of difficult to account in an equation.
Yeah, good. Thank you for that explanation, Sam. Now we're going to drill down another level. We're going to stay in corporate venture capital. And you, in a more recent paper, which we'll also link to, you highlight another classification distinction to separate out family corporate venture capital from non-family corporate venture capital. So in venture investing by family-owned companies, including, for example, those with family CEOs, but generally, as I think you'll tell us, it's about ownership and control. But tell us what caused you to investigate this special type of venture capital, family corporate venture capital.
Yes, so basically with two co-authors from Bocconi University, Mario Amore and Valerio Pelucco, we read the literature and we think we identified a gap in the corporate venture capital literature in the sense that differences in the strategies and outcomes of corporate venture capital investments can be traced back to the characteristics of the parent companies behind corporate venture capital funds. So we can say that corporations behind corporate venture capital funds influence you know, the resources that are available to the corporate venture capital programs, but also their due diligence, their selection of target companies, their investment style, etc., etc. And so the existing literature at now has overlooked how the ownership structure of the parent company behind corporate venture capital funds matters for CVC outcomes. And in particular, we study a peculiar characteristics of the ownership structure of parent companies, that is the presence of a family as a controlling owner of the parent organization. So the point is, why we focus on families, on the presence of a family as a controlling owner and not on other characteristics. Because if you look at the data on corporate venture capital investments in the US from 2000 to 2017, more than one third of all corporate venture capital investments are made by family firms. And here I want just to give you the definition of what is a family firm for us. So in this paper, we use the typical definition used in the finance and entrepreneurship literature, that is, we define a family firm in the case of listed companies, okay, as when a family owns at least 5% of the equity stake of the company. But in our paper, we also use another definition, so we calculated with very sophisticated techniques the voting rights associated to the family, and we set two different thresholds, 5% and 10%, and our results in the paper are very stable. So this criterion is very robust.
What about unlisted companies, Sam?
Yeah, so our sample is made on listed firms who have a corporate venture capital program. So we are talking about US corporations. Instead, the typical criterion used to define a family firm in the case of unlisted companies, so in the case of private firms, is a threshold of 50% of the equity capital. So it's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you found a number of characteristics of family corporate venture capital. One phrase that I picked out from the paper that sounds counterintuitive is that family owners seek to minimize risk in their portfolios, which sounds a little different than venture capital investing, which we always associate with high risk or high risk amplitude, perhaps. So explain that for us, if you will, please.
Yeah, I would say that you're right. So at the first glance, this seems in contrast with the very nature of venture investing. So if you look at the studies by top scholars like, you know, Mara Faccio, Anderson and Rieb, Bertrand and Shoar, and others, they all show that family firms hold less diversified portfolios of assets, and typically they are more cautious in their investment strategies. For instance, they make safer projects, they invest a lower amount in R&D, etc., etc. So basically, our question is, what happens when family firms engage in venturing activities? So I would say that this risk mitigation behavior of families is not necessarily in contrast with venture investing. But basically, the point is that family owners, they can take they can engage in venturing activities, but at the same time, they are more likely to adopt some governance mechanisms that attenuate risk in their venturing activities. Okay, so this is the nature of families in venture investing. So I would say that some characteristics of these families are that they prefer to be involved in their companies in a very stable way and in the very long time. And they have also a desire to maintain control over time. So this is what makes family corporate venture capital different from non-family corporate venture capital in their attitude to nurture entrepreneurial companies, et cetera, et cetera. So we another aspect that we need to take into account to solve these you know, puzzling issues of risk mitigation in venture investing is that when we think about traditional venture capital, when you fail, it's a failure. But in the case of corporate venture capital, when you as an investor fail, this can be a success for the corporation and for the corporate investor. Because, for instance, you can invest in a portfolio company, this company fails, but in your holding period, you have learned a certain technology or a certain manufacturing process, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's a really interesting aspect. And you also identify some other consequences or related findings about family corporate venture capital. You call it investing closer to home, both geographically and in terms of the closeness of the industry that they invest in. And you found a systematic difference between the family CVC and other non-family VC investments. So let's explore that a little bit, Sam.
Yeah, sure. So I would say that when we look at the selection of investments between family corporate venture capital and non-family corporate venture capital, I would say that the behavior of families to minimize risk is very clear in the data. So we found that family corporate venture capitalists are more likely to syndicate with other investors. That is a typical risk mitigation strategy, because through a syndicate, you have, you know, a second opinion on the investment. You have more capital committed by others, and so you reduce your exposure to a single investment, et cetera, et cetera. And when they syndicate, they also join larger syndicates. And this is another signal of risk mitigation. Plus, as you said, we also find that family corporate venture capital funds target ventures that are closer to the parent organization in terms of geography. So typically ventures are located closer to the corporation, and family corporate venture capitals are also less likely to invest abroad. And they also target companies that are more close from an industrial point of view. So basically, we can think as industrial proximity as a way to reduce asymmetric information between the corporation and the venture, and also an easier way to facilitate monitoring. So if you are closer to your target company, it is easier to monitor, and so you are still reducing the investment risk. Yeah. Interestingly, I would say our results are stronger under information opaqueness. So when they invest in companies that are younger than 19 months, these results are even stronger, so calling for a risk mitigation strategy. And also when the family parent company is led by a family CEO, that is still in line with the story.
Yeah, so that's really a fascinating insight there, and it relates to superior performance. The bottom line conclusion is family CVC has superior performance, right?
Yes, this is a very interesting result, I think, because when you see that family corporate venture capital take less risk in comparison to other funds, you may expect also a lower return. Okay, but instead, in our case, obviously this is not always true. Eh? But you may expect this type of association. Instead, we find that the more the support of a family corporate venture capital for a venture, the higher is the likelihood of successful exits in the sense of IPOs or trade sales. So when the ventures are sold to other funds or to other companies. Plus, we also find a long-term value effect. So ventures backed by family corporate venture capital funds, after the IPO, display a better market performance than those backed by non-family corporate venture capital, market performance, I mean Tobin's Q, and also a higher innovation performance. Because when we calculate the value of the patent portfolio of ventures after the IPO, this value is higher for the ventures backed by family corporate venture capital. And this is not driven by a higher quantity of patents. So if you take the value of the patents divided by the number of patents, this ratio is higher for family corporate venture capital backed companies in comparison to non-family corporate venture capital backed companies.
Yeah, amazing. And you had another finding too, which was also fascinating, was family corporate venture capital was more resilient, you said, as indicated by the level of investment in economic downturns and busts, i.e. they hang in there. Is that a good way to say it?
Yes, absolutely. Basically, we found that focusing on the last big financial crisis, if you look at the amount invested by family corporate venture capital funds against non-family corporate venture capital funds, this amount is double, is twice the amount invested by non-family corporate venture capital funds. And this can be easily explained by the literature on family firms and also by the finance literature, because family firms' investments are typically driven by other motivation than the financial objectives. For instance, the desire to maintain control, as we discussed before, the long-term horizon of the family, the willingness to put forward family traditions, stability, and family involvement in the venture, and also the higher commitment toward other stakeholders in the market, and also tolerance for failure. So given to the fact that families have more tolerance for failure in comparison to non-family firms, this type of behavior, this type of resilient behavior in the crisis is to some extent expected.
Well, let's relate that to this longer time horizon, Sam. We've mentioned it before, but it's really important. It's important in Austrian economics, of course, to think about time preference. So the longer time horizon that family corporate venture capital has seems to help performance. Can you just drill down into that a little bit for us?
Yes, absolutely. So the idea is that this longer time horizon is driven by non-financial goals, especially those related to family values. Okay, and what is the main advantage for ventures? The fact that this longer time horizon translates into more stable ownership for ventures. And we know from the literature that when the ownership of a company, especially in the case of young company, when the ownership is very stable, this brings advantages for the company. And this lasts also after the IPO, because this reduces the business uncertainty. So in venture capital literature, when you see a venture capital investor who remains in the equity capital of a portfolio company even after the IPO, this is a market signal that the investor believes that the company is really valuable, even after the IPO. Okay? And so basically remaining in the venture's ownership after the IPO for a longer time signals to the market the viability of the venture's project. But I want also to link this finding to Austrian economics. So basically we can say that being more time closer to the entrepreneur allows the family investor and the entrepreneur to find an agreement, an overlap in their subjective judgment about the future states of the world. And so this creates a so-called cognitive overlap between the entrepreneur and the investor, and this reduces frictions and information asymmetries. So it is much more likely that they have a more shared idea of the future business of the company. So we are developing this idea also with Peter Klein and Nikolai Foss in another paper. And so we are lucky that also these empirical data are proving that we are true. We are right.
Yep. And that has implication for stability in the economy, right, Sam? In times of turbulence or bust, as we call it, the long-term view of the family corporate venture capital can provide the kind of stability that others can't.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly.
Good. Well, you and I talked in the past about the middle class of business or the middle class of entrepreneurship. We're hoping for everybody to be entrepreneurs at every scale, whether it's entry level taking these investments or at the corporate level, at family CVC level. Have we said anything about the middle class of entrepreneurship here, building an entrepreneurial class? Because some of these companies, as you say, are listed companies where the family component is 5% or 10% of ownership. But have we said anything in general about families and the middle class of business and entrepreneurship for everybody, do you think?
So my point and also the empirical evidence that I had from other data is that when we talk about the role of families in listed companies, especially in these very large corporations, the role played by the families is completely different than in the case of especially small firms, but also medium firms. Why? Because in a setting of corporations, like those like that of corporations, The role of the family is that, okay, I have a substantial equity stake, and so I can put forward my objectives, my values, my tradition, so I can push for stability of the ownership and also stability of the ownership of my target companies. And this is a plus in the investment, but also in general in the management of the company, okay? Especially when there is an independence between the ownership and the management of the company, this is a real plus. In the case of small firms, typically, or let me say sometimes, there is no independence between the ownership and the management of the company. And so the risk that a family owner appoints a not so capable family member in the management of the company is higher. So I would say that there is much more heterogeneity in the case of unlisted small firms than in the case of family corporations. So the role of families in small and medium companies is a bit more tricky. So there is a lot of heterogeneity, and sometimes these families in small firms are reluctant to open up the equity capital to other investors. And this is this may be a problem in certain settings. Mm-hmm.
But overall, we venture capitalists over here tend to look for unicorns and gazelles, as we call them. But we're trying to also think about introducing the variables of resilience, you know, keeping going for a long time despite the ups and downs of the market, and durability, which is a complementary idea. So it sounds like maybe I can say that your findings are complementary to that concept of families helping to build resilient and durable businesses. Can I say that?
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Good. Well, Sam, thank you for this fascinating insight into an area that I certainly didn't know about. And I think your findings are very original. They're tremendously robust, and we're going to share them with people. And we look forward to talking to you again. When does your paper with Nikolai and Peter come out?
So basically, we are in the process of in an R&R process. So we are revising the paper and resubmit again to a journal. But the working paper is still out, so you can read it, absolutely. And Andrew, okay, thank you so much for this new kind invitation. It's always a pleasure to be here and talk with you.
Well, thank you, Sam. We look forward to the next time. You always bring us new insights that we wouldn't get from anywhere else. So we thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
Economics for Business is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. And for more from Hunter Hastings, visit HunterHastings.com.